And you're listening to the High Spot Podcast alongside my tag team partner and one member of the bestowed historic Jersey Wrecking Crew, Jeff Martin. I am Brian Bergen. Catch us on Twitter at High Spot Podcast for all the latest news, notes, and comments from you guys listening to us and supporting the show. Jeff, it's great to see you again. It's been a while. A lot of stuff's happened in the world of professional wrestling. And something you've wanted to kind of gripe about is now the Bullet Club. And
yeah, what the Bullet Club's been, and I'll give my two cents on that in a little bit. But
check how you been?
Dude. I'm good, dude. But it hasn't been that much of a long time. We've just had a lot of stuff trying to into the old bank there as far as episodes. And we've been busting our butts, you know, working and working on these shows. And they just keep getting better and better, by the way.
No, I completely agree. I think we're finally starting to get our niche here. Yeah. And hey, we've had some great guests, and you know, it's always the thing everybody says, oh, we always have great guests, or we have a special guest here. But honestly, we really mean it, because people are taking time out of their day to come to speak to us, and we really appreciate it. And again, if you want to listen to all the episodes, catch us on Twitter at High Spot Podcast. You can get all the episodes loaded on there.
With the hot tag.
The hot tag.
So whenever
yes.
you want to throw in your two cents, you're more than welcome to, buddy. I've got two in the books. So, waiting for you to rant or vent on something that you got on your mind.
Oh, I got something on my mind. And it's your idol that I'm going to be talking about.
My idol. Oh, you're going to get on me for that. But
yes.
No defense on that. But listen, man, what are the chances that I ever get to sit on the bus? And you know how much I hate the morning commutes to the city, because I'm usually stuck on the bus with, let's face it, unattractive people. So what are the chances that I actually get to sit to somebody that's semi-attractive today on the bus? And mind you, it's a chick. So I'm sitting there, whatever, and, you know, it's kind of uncomfortable because the bus is kind of low.
I love how you said it's a chick. Okay.
Well, I mean, dude. You know. Well, I'm not going to say that the girl, you know, the dude was, you know, smoking hot, although I'm not afraid, you know, to admit that, because I am comfortable with my sexuality. But
you're man enough to say, you know, the guy's good looking.
But
am
know,
I good looking?
Yes, you are.
Nice.
And don't let anybody else tell you differently.
Such
okay.
A liar. Okay.
So, I'm on the bus, and sitting next to me, and it's kind of funny. Like, I kind of play like this telepathy where I'm like, "Oh, sit on the bus next to me," you know. So actually, I look out for the first time in how many times?
That never works for me.
No. So I sit on the bus, and then we're sitting down, and we're driving. We're heading into the into New York. So I'm thinking, okay. What would the pickup artist do? What would anyone do that has game? Because I don't have game. You know, this girl does not take her eyes, her face off her iPhone. And, you know, I was reading an article before, and they were saying how, you know, you tend to miss things in life because people are constantly on the phone. And I am like one of those people too. I'm on the bus too. If it's like if it's dead, and you know, I'll just sit there and I'll just look at stuff on Facebook, or, you know, I'm trying to get off of that too, because that's just, you know, too much drama there. And, you know, trying to get on, you know, just daily news or wrestling stuff so that I can talk about the show. And then the next thing you know, I'm already at work. So I miss stuff. Anyways, she's on constantly. She must have looked up five different videos, checked her a place that sells bras in the city, you know, just a bunch of things. But then again, the art of the conversation is just gone. It's just it's hard to do. You go to the train station, you go everywhere, everybody is on that phone. It's just something that I notice, and a little bit disappointing to me.
Well, I've always been disappointed in you. And I have had discussions about this, you know, even before doing the show, of how just like the hold up conversation with somebody is the extreme most difficult thing to do. And it shouldn't be. You know, I say something, you say something, and we try to strike up something in common.
But I like the way you do it, though, because you come off like all like inquisitive. You come off like all like, you know, like, wow, this guy's got something to say. I, to me, am more like a ask questions kind of guy. But you kind of seem to like, you're kind of like a notice something, and you talk about it, and then the girl goes, oh, yeah, no, really, yeah, oh, you know.
Well, that's always been my case. I've always noticed certain things, like if a girl does her nails or her hair's done a different style, I'll mention it. Not to get anything back in return, but kind of just strike a conversation, or just common courtesy, basically.
The only
in my
thing
opinion.
I could have said was like, hey, so how's the iPhone, you know, because I'm thinking of changing it. Other than that, I had nothing. But, you know, then again, one do I always have anything?
Yeah, but I've gone to the same mindset. Who knows? Maybe it'll help me out in the future. I don't know. But I really kind of now go to girls, especially the ones you're attracted to, and just go with that I don't care mentality. Now, it hasn't worked for me in terms that I'm not doing it to try to get a girl or get a date or get some digits or anything like that. But what I've come to realize is, one, nothing changes regardless of what I do. But at the same time, I feel better about myself because I just don't care anymore. whether how good looking you are or whether you're not paying attention to me, if I ask you a question and you can't give me more than just a one word answer, I don't want to waste my time with talking to you. Because why would I bother wasting my time?
You know,
I have enough time to watch movies and you know check wrestling websites.
Oh my God, my life is so miserable. We're talking about WWE and the Bullet Club or the Club, and here's my gripe, Brian. And this is what I'm really mad at. Okay, the Club. You know what? Eventually they might change it, but I think WWE is really dropping the ball with this. I think, first of all, again, it's not their creation, so they're making Roman Reigns look strong the way he dominates Gallows and Anderson. That I have a problem with. That still hasn't bothered me, but when I saw Global Wars, and I did, of course, my Global Wars preview on the hot tag on the second episode, and I mentioned how, well, not mentioned, but it struck me how Bullet Club does it right. Now, I know they own the name, okay, because New Japan, and they own the rights to the name, and WWE can only call it The Club, but what strikes me is that Adam Cole debuted. He was the new member to the Bullet Club because the Young Bucks teased it before the show started. So, okay, they teased it, and they had Colt Cabana out there with Jay Lethal, and they had the two shirts out there. Lights go out. Adam Cole shows up, and then they beat the living snot out of everybody. Everybody. I'm talking about everybody's. Like, our cousin might have been in there. They might have gotten super kicked by the Young Bucks. It was crazy, okay? So, my gripe is, to me, they're doing it better. And what I told you when this whole thing started was, WWE, it's not hard. Go back 20 years ago when the NWO started, when Kevin Nash and Scott Hall appeared. Go copy exactly, step by step, and you'll have one of the hottest factions ever. Because you know what? It's 20 years already. It's time to recycle it. Do it the same way. But right now, they don't tell a backstory for Gallows and Anderson. They're made to look weak in front of Roman Reigns. They're called the Club. I mean, to me, it just, I'm getting disappointed. I really am.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more, and I hate agreeing with you, but
Brian, you're so mellow. This is not pissing you off as much as it is me.
How can it piss me off, Jeff, if I know this is what's going to happen? We have talked about that. I forget what episode we talked about it. We know this is going to happen. You have a major opportunity here, but the downfall is like what you said. It's not Vince McMahon's creation. It's not the WWE creation. The machine didn't build it, so why do they want to invest in it? They want to invest in their own product, their own guys. So there's no doubt in my mind Roman Reigns is going over. He's looking strong. He's making guys like Gallows and Anderson look weak. And AJ Styles, unfortunately, has now fallen upon the one thing I feared was going to happen, not necessarily as age, but just the kind of body type he has and the kind of punishment he takes with his style. He's now dealing with some nagging injuries where he's been taken off TV and taken off live events
up to Extreme Rules because he's still unhealthy.
Maybe he'll do a couple bumps here and there to kind of help promote it, but this now sends the message where at Payback he showed that he can be a main eventer. He can carry the ball. But now with the same thing we had issues dealt with, you know, comparing Finn Balor to Daniel Bryan, and now AJ Styles falls into that category. Well,
it's because they've been working him nonstop.
Yes, I completely agree, but at the same time, you could also say that they've worked John Cena nonstop. They've worked Roman Reigns nonstop, Sheamus nonstop, all these theoretically big, stereotypical WWE superstars, and they haven't broken down as much as a guy like AJ Styles would or Daniel Bryan or Finn Balor. The point is that it's starting to show, and the WWE is probably now wavering against it, even before AJ was dealing with some nagging injuries. Whether the WWE knew about it beforehand or not, who knows? But with that being said, like I said, I can't get mad because it's what you expect.
So basically you're let down again.
I'm disappointed. No, but again, I was expecting it. So what's the point of griping about it? The only thing I hope is that they don't devalue him enough that when Finn Balor does come to the main roster, which to me it's only a matter of time now. We've said that, you know, the last couple of episodes.
Most likely after June 8th.
It's most likely after June 8th. And he comes up, it means something. Because at the end of the day, you don't have many stables. They tried to do that with the League of Nations. It completely failed and was total disaster. You have so much more here to give that type of anything can happen atmosphere in this supposed new era. And you're failing miserably at it.
Yeah, they're
going back to the old ways.
Because you can get into a summer. Okay, you get into summer where people are going to watch it in anticipation for SummerSlam. And we talk about June 8th real quick about Finn Balor because he will take on Samoa Joe at TakeOver at Full Sail on June 8th. So most likely Samoa Joe is going to defend the title against Finn Balor. So then after that, the rumors are going to get hot and heavy and crazy. But if you go back to when the NWO debuted, right? It was early spring. And they led into the whole summer that year, and you know, and they led to who's going to be the third man? Who's this guy, you know? And you know what? I was brainstorming, and I was thinking, how could they make this amazing? How could they make this impactful? You know what I thought about? If they really did this exactly the same way with the NWO, John Cena could have been the leader of the Bullet Club.
Could have worked.
Could have worked.
Could have worked. And maybe, who knows, maybe because of his injury, timing was just wrong and not on
still,
his side.
It still could work, you know what it I mean? Still could, it could have kept them off, you know?
I mean, and we'd finally get what we wanted, right? Everybody wants Roman Reigns to turn heel, but now we finally get John Cena turning heel. And kind of maybe towards the end of his road here, who knows if he's going to continually be a full-time superstar right now in terms of his body and his wear and tear. Knowing John Cena, he'll try to go as long as he can. But it's exactly how you described it, similar to Hulk Hogan, doing that final thing that you never thought he'd ever do in his career, and he did it. And, he, you know, although he was somewhat in the tail end of his career, which you could say John Cena is too, it elevated him to a new level.
Exactly.
Everybody boos him anyway. Why not give him a reason to boo him now? A real reason to
boo
him.
And now he'll actually be cheered.
Yeah, because the Bullet Club will actually have some validity, because there is validity behind John Cena's name, and they'll be, you know, cheered, and it'll be a cool kind of thing to do, like what the NWO was. It was cool to see something different. But going back to what you said, too, when you said the art of conversation's gone, right, in terms of all the social media.
Not here, folks, because we're actually conversating really well.
We are conversating really well. We always do. I mean, this isn't no surprise to you, and should be no surprise to the people listening to the show, and you can catch us on Twitter at High Spot Podcast, because you're listening to it right now. What people fail to realize, especially in the world of professional wrestling, Jeff, and tell me if you disagree or not. You talked about, you know, nobody can strike up a conversation. Everybody's on their phone. Instant gratification. That's what everybody wants. We saw them try to milk this whole, and we actually praised the WWE of kind of milking this whole Bullet Club thing. What was going to happen with AJ? What was going to happen with Anderson Gallows? Is Finn coming up? It had a slow build, which you rarely saw, and now they're going back to their old ways.
Now I've seen them
everybody
in the ring.
Wants to see Gallows everybody wants to see
in the ring.
Yeah.
I've seen them in the ring already. I've seen them get pinned. You know? I've seen Anderson look weak. Come on, you know? Wait till the pay-per-view.
And for those that, and maybe, you know, hey, I'll admit, I was probably one of those too, because I felt the WWE title should, or the WWE World Heavyweight title should be defended on a month-to-month basis, but Brock Lesnar proved that if you have a name and have some value behind you, you don't have to defend every time.
Oh, you know what, that was crap, you know who complained about that? That was such bull crap.
That's just, obviously, the guys who hate part-timers coming in and doing it, but at the end of the day, they're still putting money in your pockets, guys. But that being said, that proved well that when you milk something really good, to see a spectacle or an anomaly, or not anomaly, like an Andre the Giant type of thing, an eighth wonder of the world like Brock Lesnar, it was an event. And to have the Bullet Club appear and see Gallows and Anderson milk the fact that they're going to get in the ring would be an event. You can't wait to see these guys go in here teasing them.
They should have just attacked the Usos. And next week, they should attack somebody else. They should have gone backstage, and there should have been another attack on somebody else, and kept doing so. And then, what would the Jersey Wrecking Crew be doing right now? We'd be like, no, boys, I'm sorry. We don't wrestle until the big pay-per-view, and we'll see you at Payback. And that's when we'll take on the Usos.
Oh, we'd be getting that cheap heat. We'd be allowing ourselves to constantly tease the fans, which as much as the fans want instant gratification, they appreciate it when you have to wait for something good to happen. And something good would happen. We would milk it for all it's worth, and the moment you would see the Jersey Wrecking Crew attack the Usos, or attack the club, it'd be something special. And you know what? You want to pay money to see it.
And John Fisher gave us one of the highest compliments, saying that we don't complain about a bunch of things. We give our opinions because we want to see it better. But you know what, man? See, now I'm angry. Today, I'm freaking angry because I don't think this is leading up to my expectations. Now, I've been let down way before, you know, tons before. CM Punk, when instead of going with the pipe bomb gimmick, they turn him face because, you know what, why? Why? I loved when he was assaulting Cena and Triple H. But you know what? Oh, you know, let's sell some shirts and stuff like that. Hey, whatever. Okay? That's fine. That let me down. Then the whole Paul Heyman and CM Punk thing let me down. When Curtis Axel came out as Paul Heyman guy, that let me down. The way they messed up with Cesaro as a Paul Heyman guy let me down. Okay, I've been let down before. But this was something different, man. This was the Bullet Club. This was something that could have been so good, and I'm not poo-pooing on it yet, but I already, you know, I've been let down before. Right now. I've been let down before, and I know how it's going to end up. And so now, you know, they've kind of, now we're going Extreme Rules. Now, you know, Newark, New Jersey, you don't know if something big's going to happen. But you know what? Like, I'm just very, very disappointed the way Gallows and Anderson have been treated. If you look at some of the articles, you know, it says WWE has really dropped the ball. They've effed up.
You know, a lot of people can kind of interpret it as if we're getting mad and angry. Jeff, there's no question that you're upset and angry about this, too. But we have to look at it in this perspective, right? We know they're going in the wrong direction, had so much potential to work with, so many ways you could have done this, right? And now you're in this situation where you're wasting a moment. You're wasting an opportunity here. But that being said, you still have the ability to theoretically save it.
But Brian, if they were let down by creative, man. Ballard did his job. He teased. He teased everyone. See you Monday. He teased it. He was doing his job. Everybody in the stands with the Bullet Club shirts pointing to, yeah, it's the greatest thing going. They did their job. The fans wanted it. And then freaking Gallows and Anderson did their job. There's something about them. But you know what failed them? And like they always do 99.9% of the time, creative failed them. Vince failed them. You know what? Because it doesn't stop. It's over and over and over again.
And this will continue over and over again, Jeff, until somebody else takes the mantle. But here's the thing. We say, oh, we can't wait till Vince finally, you know, steps down. Who knows when that'll happen? I mean, this guy will literally go to his grave and still be running the company because he's that powerful.
He'll still be booking. He's the only person that can book from the grave and beyond.
He has that mentality, man. And we've been dealing with this for how many years? And to think it's going to change anytime soon, it's just a tease, man. That's what it is.
I would actually, hey, that's I'm just not trying to say I'm smart. I'm not trying to say I'm better than anybody that works there because they actually write for, you know, soap operas and they actually have a degree in creative writing. But come on, man. It doesn't take a genius. It doesn't take me to tell you how great would it have been for John Cena to be the leader of the Bullet Club in the summertime at SummerSlam. Whether you get cheered or booed, you got something. You got something fresh. And he doesn't have to be full heel. He can still do his shtick, whatever like that, and still be Bullet Club because there is a shade of gray with being in the Bullet Club. They're cool, yet they're heels. So, I mean, to me,
especially,
man,
with a polarizing figure like John Cena.
Yeah, but he'd been huge.
Would definitely make sense, man. But again, you know, where this ends up, which I think we kind of have the feeling from what you could tell, guys, of our attitude and our tone towards this. Jeff's very heated. I'm kind of accepting the fact that I know what's going to happen, eventually is going to happen, waiting for the other shoe to drop.
It's like Brian's the Bret Hart, and I'm like the Jim the Anvil, and he's trying to calm me down right now.
No, I'm not trying to calm you down. Dude, you're entitled completely to feel how you feel. And hey, I'm right there with you. The only difference between you and I, Jeff, is I contain it because you know what? I didn't expect anything less than what I'm seeing right now.
And
but
Raw,
again, it's still savable. It's still doable.
Brian,
but we'll always fall under the same problem, though. Will they do it? And 99.9% of the time is no. Because although it makes sense to us, it makes sense to the diehards that are listening to the show and the diehards that just love pro wrestling like we do. What makes sense and what's logical isn't what's logical to them. It's what makes business sense to them. If I didn't make you, then I don't want anything to do with you.
Yeah, exactly. They've done it tons of times where they'd rather take personal stuff over making money.
Yes.
You know?
So, and, you know, to steal a phrase, this is not what's best for business. Because what's best for business is to give the audience, you don't always have to give the audience what they want. Yeah, you can always tease them. You can always make them anticipate it or want it and then swerve them around the other way to make them think, haha, we got you. But you have to listen to the audience because at the end of the day, despite the fact this is a company that's in the stock market, it's a publicly owned company, at the end of the day, it's the crowd that wants to go in. But again, Jeff, you and I can go on this hours and hours and hours again. But you know what? We'll still be the ones.
We get to Raw for despite, hours and hours because that was let down.
Despite anything, we'll still be the ones that invest money into this company, invest money into this business because we'll still watch it.
No, we will we'll still watch it.
So
We're
in it for better or for worse. It's like a marriage. Till death do us part, we're still part of professional wrestling in the WWE. Because you know what? This is a marriage that has not been good for me for 30 years. Well, maybe not 30 years, maybe 25 years. No. Yeah, 25 years. And, you know, it's not getting any better.
Listen, I'll tell you what, though. We really will start talking about Ring of Honor and TNA and Evolve and New Japan because we'll evolve as we get, you know, more accustomed to these.
We have to, because WWE is getting us so frustrated.
It's not even that. Just,
we have to go to other alternatives out there.
Yeah, good to find other alternatives.
Because although WWE likes to make you think they're the end-all, be-all, and that's not necessarily the case. There are other alternatives to watch.
Lucha Underground is on fire. People keep talking to me about that. I've got to spend more time on that.
And Jeff and I will definitely do our very best to cover those things, because at the end of the day, like you said, it's alternatives to watch. When you're frustrated, you can see other things and still be happy.
I mean, I tried doing a Global Wars review, and it was out of my comfort zone. But I gave it a shot because just the card was so stacked, and it was in Chicago, and it was a very, very good card. And, you know, Chicago fans, to me, Chicago fans are very spoiled, because they had Payback, which was a good pay-per-view, and they got Global Wars, a few weeks later. Yeah, and it was a good card. And, of course, the Bullet Club, super kicking their way.
Maybe our good buddy Josh Lopez was there. Who knows?
Maybe.
We'll have to reach out to him, see if he's won the super kick. Then
I'll tell you what, though. He's still playing mean guitar, though, even with a mouthful of the Young Bucks' foot.
Boots in his face. Boots to faces. Hashtag.
But no, a very great show. Yeah. And again, to me, just looking at that kind of made me realize, see, they're doing the Bullet Club right. Even though they own the name, it's no excuse. They're still doing it right because it's cool, man. It's cool. I'm not saying WWE has to, like, you know, put everything in sight and put a 12-year-old in the audience, but I'm just saying, man, that was cool. I was like, wow, you know, that's something worth like watching, man. I want more of that.
I got a question for you. I mean, I don't want to go back to WWE, but here's the thing. How much do you think all this has to do with the mere fact that Seth Rollins is literally almost good to go and ready to go, and John Cena, you know, we're just waiting on we know when he's coming back. So what makes you think a lot of this has to do maybe with the return of the established stars like John Cena and Seth Rollins?
Oh, man, I just hope these guys are in placeholders, because once Seth Rollins comes back, the machine's going to be fully on Rollins, and he's going to be the top babyface. And, you know, AJ's going to go maybe drop down to 2 or 3. You know, it's, you know...
And unfortunately, that's the unfortunate side of it.
And by the way,
I would love to see an AJ Seth Rollins, because when they fought Ring of Honor,
my God,
for the WWE World Heavyweight title,
main event SummerSlam,
that's amazing. I would love to see that.
What happened to Finn Balor if he shows up? That's crazy, man. They'd be too deep now. But just real quick, man, Payback, again, we feel bad for Enzo Amore, and we hope he feels better. That was a nasty, nasty.
Well, he was good. He dealt with a concussion. But at the same time, depending on
where.
We don't want to see that.
But newsflash, you better get there. You better get back soon, because before you know it, Big Cass is going to be,
it's going to be hard for him, man. The way the WWE does their concussion protocols and how they do it and the length of time it takes them to do it. You know, Enzo right now could be seeing his dream of being in the tag team or being on the main roster as part of a very impactful tag team kind of going the wayside the fact that Big Cass is making a quote-unquote big impact right now.
Oh, yeah. I mean, and he's 7 foot tall. And Vince McMahon, what did he say? You can't teach that.
Now, the thing with Big Cass,
I mean,
I like him. Hey, God bless you, man, for being Carmella. How you doing, Carmella? But
how does she kiss him? Like, she's very small. Like,
she probably needs a ladder, you know. But at the same time, you see them. It's fun. Congratulations, Big Cass. I won't dive too much into.
You know what, though, Big Cass kind of he does need Enzo, though. I mean, to me, he just needs a little bit more work on the mic before. Well, yeah.
He definitely needs more work on the mic. I mean, it's one thing doing catchphrases, and those are always good for, like, you know, nice pops and to, you know, turn the momentum to more comedic side or more intensity side. But at the same time, you don't see him enough in the ring. Being part of a tag team now kind of exposes you to see what other weaknesses you have. And speaking of exposing you,
not now, maybe. Maybe later.
Nah, maybe later. But, you know, not to fray from the topic, but look at Apollo Crews. I haven't seen him on TV at all.
No, man, I'm telling you, dude.
And that goes to the perfect example.
Just because you're good in NXT, you got to prove something, you know?
You do.
You got to... he's a guy that's good.
He is.
But, I don't know, like, main event, and superstars?
To me, the vaudevillians, man, they can talk on the mic with their gimmick. Not a lot of people probably understand it, but they can also go in the ring. So they have an advantage above Enzo and Cass, who, you know, are good in the ring, but they're more for the entertainment aspect. And Apollo Crews, who's just that, again, stereotypical look. And hey, I like Apollo Crews, but at the same time, you gotta show me some type of personality.
You just can't smile out there and do somersaults.
Hey guys, I'm out here and I'm gonna give my best effort every single time.
You gotta connect.
Doesn't work now. Now in this society, Jeff, it's all shades of gray. You have to have some type of personality. You don't have to be the badass, but you have some type of personality. And, you know, maybe this is a step for Big Cass to, you know, him to elevate him more. Who knows what will hurt him in the future? Who knows? If you're Enzo, you want to get back as soon as possible because you want to keep riding that tidal wave of momentum. Apollo Crews right now has to find himself. Same thing. You don't want to be put in the doghouse like Tyler Breeze. You know, there's so much young talent here, Jeff, that, like I said, I'm excited for the future, but I'm afraid that the future is going to be similar to how we're talking about in the present right now, where you're going to see all these young talents, all these guys coming up, all these established guys from NXT, but because they don't have a certain look or a certain way that the crowd responds or connects to them, they're going to be left in the back.
Plus, you know what? If you don't make an impact right away, they're going to give up on you, a la Tyler Breeze. So lots of stuff. I mean, we're not trying to gripe that much or harp on WWE, but of course, and then they're expecting to have more releases coming soon after Extreme Rules. We were talking about that too. So a lot of people could be on the, you know, on the go too. I mean, last week there was releases where our boy Sandow was released and King Barrett. So, you know, more releases are expected too after Extreme Rules. So we'll see, man. We'll see if these fresh faces can come out through that with those guys gone.
It's probably the first time you'll ever hear me say this ever, but with releases like that, I couldn't be any happier because I'd rather see Damian Sandow, for example, be successful and get a good earn a good living. I don't know if he was earning a good living on the road doing, you know, that type of schedule that WWE entails him to do and being a jobber. I'd rather him go out and make a name for himself again and get himself over anywhere else and be happy than to be miserable and stuck in basically purgatory.
I mean, how about this? He'll be wrestling against Colt Cabana for WrestlePro. I mean, I'm excited to see that.
Who's not going to want to see that match?
That's going to be pretty good.
It'll be amazing.
And I might check it out in Keyport, New Jersey. I probably will go check that out too, man.
I'll try to head down there with you if I possibly can. If I can get away from my other jobs.
You work, you know, I call you and be like, yeah, dude, I'm working.
This isn't work though.
But
we're gonna hire for that money.
But you know, switching subjects though, and I'm reading, you know, the UFC's for sale, and you know Dana White's trying to say no, and they're coming off finally getting UFC allowed in New York, and they're coming off Conor McGregor, you know, going off like on a semi tangent and saying, you know, he was retiring, and then it was for naught, and then he was taken off the card against Nate Diaz, and then he makes headlines about a bunch of stuff, and most recently against Floyd Mayweather. And, you know, I'm looking at these things and I'm like, man, like Conor McGregor is news, you know, and, you know, everything circulates around this guy. And we had a chance to talk to Heidi Fang about it, a good friend for us. And, you know, we got into a bunch of stuff, and, you know, Conor McGregor is the center of the UFC universe.
Yeah, before we get into that, though, let me ask you a question. There's no doubt Conor McGregor, he is pure entertainment, pure excitement. Whenever you hear the name Conor McGregor now, not everybody might know his name, but everybody knows about him, or when they hear the name, they want to intrigue and find out who he is. So he is pure entertainment. Everything comes out of his mouth is basically, you know, gold, whatever you want to see, a positive or negative side of it. Here's the thing with the UFC, you know, and the rumors of it potentially trying to sell. In this situation, if you're owning, you're Dana White, right? And you're in this situation, could you really consider from where the UFC started and where he brought it up and changed it, would it make sense to sell it now? Who knows? Everybody talks about selling stocks high, right?
Is it at the high point that it can be, or can it get any higher or lower? I mean, is it at its peak?
I'll tell you, it's at its peak for this reason, and you tell me if you agree with me or not, right? Looking from a business standpoint, I know you don't know the UFC that well, but look at this. For the first time in how many years have they finally got licensing in New York? They're licensed in every other state, every other country except New York. They finally got it. UFC 200 is going to be huge. It's going to be there. That's the highest you can go. I mean, what else is there to be? They've already opened up a new casino in Las Vegas.
But now in New York, and they have a new, okay, they have a new arena in Vegas. They're going to just start going into New York. There's got to be more revenue coming in. To me, I think right now it's getting high, but to me, it can go further.
But for that point, why wouldn't you want to sell it then? Because how many people are going to want to be invested to get part of that pie? They want it. Because the moment it gets at its highest is the moment where when you come down, nobody else is going to want to invest
anymore. Yeah, I would keep it, though. I wouldn't be interesting. To me, it kind of was head-scratch because I was like, why would they be so willing to sell now? So, I mean, we take Dana White for his word, quotation marks, that they're not for sale. But, you know, that was circling around. And Heidi Fang joined us, and it was a great interview. And we had a chance to talk to Heidi Fang.
We had a chance to talk to her. It was amazing. If you guys want to catch her, you can catch her on Twitter at Heidi Fang. Again, she does a podcast of her own, which we would love to join her. And who knows, that'll happen in the near future. It's called The Renegade Podcast. You can catch that at MMA Renegades. She also writes for The Review Journal in Las Vegas.
In Vegas. And she's there. She's at the center of the MMA world.
They
in
call
Vegas.
That, you know, if Madison Garden is the mecca of, what is it, basketball sports, right?
Oh, jeez. You know how I feel about that.
Yeah, Las Vegas is the mecca of just all
entertainment.
Yeah. Money. Fights. All that. Everybody wants to go there because, you know, who knows? Maybe they'll have an NHL team there. Who knows? And that'd be pretty cool, too. Or an NFL team. How amazing is that, right? For the first time in our lifetime, we'll see that. And so she's there in the center of all that stuff. And she took a few moments of her time because she's a busy woman and goes out and constantly covers mixed martial arts, who's been a part of her life, which you'll hear. And we took a few minutes to talk to Heidi Fang, to talk not only about the UFC 200 of Jon Jones and Daniel Cormier and the whole drama, which is Conor McGregor and Dana White and what's going to happen with Ronda Rousey. So we took a few minutes out of our day, as she did hers, and this is what she had to say.
Heidi, if I said Heidi Ho, would that like end the conversation right here and then, or would that...
No, you know what? Because of like Public Enemy and all kinds of other stuff, Cab Calloway, what else? Janet Jackson had a song. Oh, Chucky, the movie, you know, Child's Play. Because of all of those movies, the expression Heidi Ho became a popular thing at a certain time.
And Mr. Hankey, too. Don't forget Mr. Hankey
from South Park.
Oh, no, you can't forget about Mr. Hankey. Never.
He loves me, and he loves you, too.
I already took this conversation to the wrong end, but I apologize. I apologize.
That's a great icebreaker, but how do you got to jump in? You are a busy, busy woman over there in Las Vegas, and I just want to get into it right away. We know you're very passionate about MMA. Conor McGregor, how much of a drama has this thing gone on where Conor McGregor now was going to fight at UFC 200, rematch with Nate Diaz, after being submitted by him and gaining his first UFC loss and defeat? What position do you fall under? Do you side along with the UFC and Dana White in terms of the stand that they took, or do you kind of feel for Conor and thinking the money he's going to bring in would benefit the fact that he could maybe pull off the press conference like he did?
Here's the thing. I've seen both sides, and I'm not just trying to say this to sound oh so diplomatic and not...
pick a side, woman.
Burn any bridges, but I feel like I have to lean right now with the UFC being right. And the reason for that is they set a precedent already with Nick Diaz back with the George St. Pierre fight when they pulled him.
Mm-hmm.
So if you pull Nick Diaz and you're pulling him from the same type of magnitude of a fight, then if you're going to, you know, stay consistent as a business, then you got to pull Conor McGregor, too. Now, is he the biggest draw the UFC has right now, bar none? Absolutely. I can't stress that enough, how much, like, even my mother, who's, like, almost 65 years old, will text me about Conor McGregor things and things that he tweets. I don't know if it's because she's half Irish or because...
That might have something to do with it.
Yeah. She would, I thought, yeah, she would said Ronda Rousey, but it's Conor McGregor?
Oh, it's Conor McGregor, 100%. Not Ronda Rousey at all. And, yeah, my mother, she kind of started watching with Ronda because it was an MMA thing where she could get involved, and she wasn't watching a woman necessarily get punched in the face. She was seeing the beauty of the armbar and going, oh, wow, there's other facets to MMA besides just punching people in the face. So that was like a good entry-level way for her. But now she went fully on board with Conor McGregor. And anyway... You know, so when you have, like, people that don't necessarily tune in to watch a fight, tuning in to watch a fight, they, you know, hear, like, my mother, then
yes,
this is adding to your draw. And to take Conor McGregor off of this card, it's, you know...
It's a huge blow, isn't it?
Yeah, I got to think that it is. But take nothing away from the new main event, DC and Cormier. I think that's a great fight and the best fight you can make if there's not a Conor McGregor fight on this card. But I think for UFC 200, it would have served to the magnitude of that card. Would I like to see McGregor on the MSG card in November? Absolutely, and I hope that there's enough time by then for all of this to pass under the bridge with the UFC and for them to make amends and come to terms with each other and press engagement. But
do you sense some bitterness between McGregor and Dana White at all in this situation?
Yeah, I think so. They're both playing the right card right now and not airing that out in public, but I think that it's there. It's got to be there at some level because he is saying no to the press engagements and doing the PR. And when you have your biggest draw, your biggest star in the UFC saying, no, I'm not going to do that, you know, I think for the UFC, Dana White's obviously got to be slightly upset about that.
Oh, yeah, I know I would be.
You're right. Yeah, you're the boss of the company. He is technically your employee, but, you know, at some point you got to be like, come on, man, this is your job. This is what you do. You have to do it. So, yeah, you know, and like I said, I'm not trying to be like devil's advocate, but on the flip side of it, when you look at McGregor's side, he's done so much press for them. You know,
$400 million too, right? What he said, like $400 million he's brought in like 8 months.
Yeah, and that's probably a very accurate number. And for this, though, something Donald Cerrone said last week during the media week has been sticking with me. We interviewed Donald Cerrone as part of one of the media scrums, and Donald Cerrone had said that with the money that McGregor was going to make for doing the press tours and being on the card, somewhere in the neighborhood of, let's say, $8 million to $10 million, he's like, I would have done it. I would have flown on a rocket ship to the moon. And that's what most people would likely say. But McGregor just obviously had had enough. He's at a point where he's just, I think, overwhelmed by it all, and he needs to take a step back. I mean, and remember, this is a very kind of sensitive, emotional time in his life where he was just in a cage, you know, in Europe, and he watched a fighter die due to trauma induced in a fight that, you know, was his, against his teammate and one of his SVG teammates. And he went through that experience, and I think maybe he just needed to take a step back, plus the loss he had to Diaz. And doing all this media and keeping all of these engagements and keeping going, I think at one point he was just like, man, I got to step back.
Yeah, you do kind of burn yourself out, and you realize as an athlete and as a fighter, you have just, you know, so many fights in you, you know? And so, yeah, I agree that McGregor overplayed his hand. And, you know, think about it this too, though. Dana White, by pulling Conor McGregor, also, you know, the company loses money. And the last thing I want to do is lose money heading into, like, the biggest event that they've ever had. But, you know, as far as that, I'm pretty sure that, you know, New York City will come around and he'll be on the card. How important was it for New York City to finally pass into the having UFC legalized in New York?
It's huge, and I think it's going to be the right move for New York as a whole in the end. I mean, think of all the revenue it's going to bring in, the jobs it's going to bring in. There is, on any given day, 8 to 9 million people in that city, and a large portion of whom can't find regular, steady work. Well, I think with the UFC coming in, it's going to open up a lot of jobs. You know, here in Las Vegas, they call it the fight capital of the world. I mean, that's why I'm here. Where would I be right now without MMA and specifically the UFC having such a hold over this city? I wouldn't have the job that I have as an MMA video journalist. I would not have that job. And
well, that's another great reason, Heidi, why Jeff and I wanted to reach out to you and speak to you, not only because we've known you for a while and kind of lost speech, and, you know, we miss you, wish you were back in New York City.
No. We do, but she's happy over there.
Yes, okay. That's how I clarified.
As a slot machine goes,
we miss her, but again, she's doing a great job over there in Las Vegas. But the main thing I never got a chance to ask you when you were around is what kind of got you into mixed martial arts and wanting to pursue that in ultimately the career that you're doing right now?
Well, I think it was a matter of all things combined in my life that made it the right fit for me. I used to train in Taekwondo and kickboxing. My brothers were wrestlers. You know, my family, we all did Taekwondo classes together and went to tournaments and competitions and all sorts of things. One side of my family is fully immersed into karate. So I think it was something where I had seen all of the elements, you know. I had grown up watching boxing. I had the wrestling, you know. I've got two brother-in-laws and a sister that are in jiu-jitsu. So it was something that I was like...
Which wrestling, amateur or pro wrestling?
They were just regular high school, you know, okay. A little college for one of my brothers, but nothing serious.
Okay.
I used to go to the meets and, like, score their matches, you know, and stuff like that. And so I was always into it from high school, I guess you could say. And then when I saw, like, my first BJ Penn fight and he faced Cal Uno and he just absolutely destroyed him, that was pretty much the fight where I was hooked on MMA. And ever since then, I've just been like, okay, I gotta follow the sport. And at first it started with certain people. I have to admit, I grew up in California. You know, we watched a lot of Pride at my sister's house. And, you know, we'd go back and watch, like, Wanderlei Silva fight. We'd go back and watch Alistair Overeem fight or, you know, all the different Pride fighters that you can think of.
I loved it better when it was a 300-pound guy against a 120-pound guy. Those were back in the day. Yeah, man.
Yeah, Emmanuel Yarborough, like
exactly.
Vitor Belfort back in the day, and still now today,
Now it's amazing. He's still fighting. He's still
different versions of him.
Definitely. So there's no doubt that this whole mixed martial arts has just been ingrained in you ever since you grew up and always been around it. So in your sense, you can appreciate the art form, artistry of it, rather than, you know, most people who are not that much familiar with it see it for the, you know, the big prize fights. You see it more in the artistic side of it.
Exactly. And then, like, so I got involved in the podcasting because I happened to be doing some internet stuff for the a site that I used to work for. That started out in New York. It was four of us. We were doing a podcast, and I was doing the web in for them, writing up the stories, transcribing things. I was working at Sirius at the time, so radio bugs plus people that I knew plus getting involved, you know, knowing all the stuff about the sport. It was just like, okay, this is right, and this is what I'm going to do.
So you listen to the High Spot Podcast. Follow us on Twitter at High Spot Podcast, talking to the knowledgeable Heidi Fang on everything MMA. Now, listen, your expertise, you just laid out your whole resume here for us in 30 seconds or less. So here's what I want to ask you. John Jones, how did he look to you coming off his last fight?
Well, I think it was some signs of ring rust, whether or not he wants to admit it. I do think that having a different opponent after you've been preparing for one man over a 7-month period does have some effect on how you turn out on a short-notice opponent. But on the other hand, I feel like, yeah, Greg Jackson does have a little bit right there with the powerlifting having an effect on his muscles. The bigger your muscles, the more you have to feed them with oxygen. And John Jones hadn't been in a cage in over a year. So you put all that together and fighting a 25-minute fight, I think that, you know, we saw a very lethargic John Jones. Now, that could be a couple of things just besides what we saw. You know, we always take what we see and we take it as the gospel, if you will. It could be a lot of things. It could be, one, he didn't want to get hurt, and he did want to fight Cormier, and he knew that UFC 200 was on the line. And he played a very cautious game plan out. And I wouldn't have put that past him. If they maybe they said after his fight that he would have the UFC 200 main event, then maybe we would have seen John Jones just go in there and obliterate OSP. Take nothing away from OSP, but he might have just done that. And then you go afterwards and go, hey, you want to fight on UFC 200? Okay. You know, we might have seen a completely different fight.
Well, I think that was a no-brainer considering the whole McGregor-Nate Diaz main event was going to be, was obviously gone and chopped off. But again, it makes it more intriguing now because, you know, it makes it more believable now that Cormier can beat Jon Jones because he didn't look that good in his last fight.
I don't think so, man. It seems like Jon Jones always gets the best of Cormier. I don't know. I'm just not confident that Cormier can beat Jon Jones.
It's going to be a polarizing matchup at UFC 200. A great main event for a great card that's stacked up. Now, speaking of polarizing figures, we spoke of Conor McGregor, Heidi, and another person that's been polarizing is Ronda Rousey, and she hasn't been in the UFC since her last loss with Holly Holmes, and now Miesha Tate takes the crown of the, I'm not even going to say the women's bantamweight champion. She's just the bantamweight champion now. I think we've done away with the women aspect of it. It's all mixed martial arts all the way around. So when you see Miesha Tate coming on here, what does she bring to the table now? Because, again, you can't replace a Ronda Rousey. But do you think maybe Holly Holmes should have gotten that rematch since she was the person that wanted to get in there and give Miesha Tate the fight? Or do you agree with maybe the matchup card and maybe, who knows, Holly Holmes needs a warm-up match before she gets another shot at the title, and it's Ronda automatically right after Tate's next defense?
Yeah, that's the hard part about this game is I'm not sure exactly how they determine these types of things when it comes to rematches. You know, Jose Aldo said he wanted that rematch after getting knocked out in 13 seconds, but McGregor was clearly not fighting at 45 again, so it was something that didn't seem was going to work out no matter which way you sliced it. With Holly Holm, she was finished in her fight, too. Does it warrant an automatic rematch? I think a lot of people wanted to see that one, only because it took the five-round period for Misha to actually get that submission. And on top of that, Holly Holm was already, you know, ahead on the scorecards. Not by much, but she was. She was yes. ahead. So she was basically going to probably win that fifth round. And up until Misha submitted her, that was all Holly's fight. So if you look at it from that perspective, I would say she did warrant a rematch. But at the same time, she was finished. I think, you know, in cases like Ronda Rousey when someone's finished, or Jose Aldo or Holly Holm when they're finished, and it's a definite, like, wow, you got finished in that fight, this person took your belt, that they should have to work their way back before getting an immediate rematch. Now, the only exceptions I can see are, like, for Jose Aldo and for Ronda Rousey, they were leading that division with the amount of title defenses that they had, and reigning over it for quite some time before that loss. So I think having sold a rematch would make a lot of hype. But, you know, it's hard to figure out and determine. Sometimes they give them right away, sometimes they don't. And I can't figure out the rhyme or reason to it and why. But, you know, I'd love to be an insider.
So you guys want to talk about the men's division, women's division. I want to talk about cyborgs, okay? That's what I want to talk about, okay? Cyborg, yeah. Tell me about what can I expect at 198 from her? Can I just expect an ass kicking? Is that what can I expect?
I like Leslie Smith a lot, and I think she's a warrior. She's trained out in Northern California with the Gracies and also, you know, the Diaz brothers. And I think that her will when she gets in there is very strong. She's got a lot of fight in her. But there's no denying that Cyborg is who she is. And as people put it, Cyborg needs a feeding. And right now, I mean, I would love to say that Leslie Smith will fight the good fight and that she won't get finished, but I can't see any other outcome for this fight except for Cyborg.
Oh, they got to set her up with a win. They're going to get, yeah. You know, they got a lot invested, I would say. Speaking of a lot invested, you're not only your MMA fan, but a lot invested, too, with the San Francisco 49ers. And what do you want what do you want your football team? No, stop. I can't admit to that. I have everything here written on a sheet of paper. I'm not that good.
I thought you remembered from our day.
No, I remember. No. See, I'm not.
Heidi's trying to be modest to think he has everything written down. Literally, he has nothing in front of him.
I like to tell the truth. I'm an honest guy. What can I say? But listen, what 49ers? What do you think they need to draft?
A new front office.
You like Chip Kelly? How do you let Harbaugh go?
Oh, Jim Harbaugh. I miss him.
You miss the pants, miss the capris, huh?
I do. I miss Jim Harbaugh. But the thing is like, I think, like, Jed York has things a little bit twisted up there in that front office.
Can the GM get along with anybody they hire? Trent Baalke, right? Yeah, he just...
He's like, you know, you see guys like Anthony Davis, I'm going to retire, and I'm going to disappear off the face of, you know, the planet, and... You know, he's bar none one of the best players the team had, and then all of a sudden now they can't even come to terms with him. You got guys like Patrick Willis, fucking 30 years old, one of the best linebackers that ever played the game. You know, it's just a little bit sketchy. When Frank Gore left, that was the heart of the team right there. That was the heart of the team for me. And when the heart of the team left, I was like, man, this season's over.
Heidi, we thank you so much for coming on. We know you're busy and you're about to go and do your show as well, so we appreciate you coming on with us. You can catch her on Twitter, Heidi Fang, at Heidi Fang. Again, the Renegade Podcast, at MMA Renegade. She does that with Phil Devine, correct? He's your co-host as well? With Phil
And Dwayne Finley.
Exactly, and him as well. And we want to give kudos to them too. Heidi, thank you so much. Hey, if we ever make to Vegas... for a UFC event, because that's something I really want to do. Definitely want to hit you up and see if we can make that happen. We miss you here in the city. Hope you come visit maybe once in a blue moon. Who knows?
For 200.
For 200 or 201. Or 201 when it makes it to Madison Square Garden.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, when it makes it to Madison Square Garden, we'd love to see you there. Heidi, thank you so much for being on.
Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate the time, guys.
What a great interview that was.
She's so obese. She loves what she does, man. I mean, it's great to hear someone like that.
One word to describe Heidi: passionate. She loves what she does, and we love what we do because you guys are the reason why we do it. You guys are listening to the High Spot Podcast alongside my tag team partner, Jeff Martin. I am Brian Berger. Catch us on Twitter at the High Spot Podcast. Heidi, we thank you so much for your time. We love to have you on the show. As soon as possible. And again, she's busy. Again, you can catch her at Heidi on Twitter at Heidi Fang. Catch her on the Renegade Podcast at MMA Renegades.
Knows her stuff, man.
Knows her stuff. And at the same time, she is able to explain it to all of us who maybe for the most part don't follow it as much. I mean, it's relatable. I mean, Jeff and I talk about sports, entertainment, professional wrestling, whatever you want to talk about or however you want to call it. And it's still relatable in a way because, you know, believe it or not, mixed martial arts or the UFC, Jeff, has taken something away from pro wrestling in terms of how they want to promote their athletes. I mean, now everybody knows who Ronda Rousey is, and everybody's now starting to figure out who Conor McGregor is and trying to put him in the same conversation as Floyd and Mayweather. These two could possibly fight?
Could that be a possibility? Could Mayweather and McGregor meet in the ring one day?
Let me steal a pro wrestling adage here. Never say never.
And who would win? It got to be Mayweather.
It depends on what kind of fighter it'd be. I just think, you know, that's something I would pay money to see. And I wouldn't really care necessarily who won. Unless you're invested on the MMA side or invested on the boxing side, which would be, it's always been for, I don't know how many years though, and I would love to have Heidi back on again and discuss even further with her because we didn't have a chance to.
A lot of stuff developed after we had her on.
Yeah, it's the battle between what's more important, boxing or wrestling. What's involved more. It's always this battle between the two, which one's better, which one's legit. And, you know, who knows? Maybe we'll have Heidi on again and discuss that. But in the meantime, guys, great interview with her. We loved it. Heidi Fang, thank you so much. You've been listening to the High Spot Podcast. Catch us on Twitter at High Spot Podcast.
Another great show, dude, man. Let's do this again.
You keep rolling them out, man. For Jeff Martin, I am Brian Berg of the Jersey Wrecking Crew.
I think you say Jesse and the Rippers.
Jesse and the Rippers.
Alicia Wallace joins us next time. Talk about Sports Authority and all their shady business. This is Jeff Martin.
Brian Bergen. See you guys next time.
Peace.